Hey, you are listening to The Workplace Leader. This is the podcast where we go behind the scenes of corporate real estate, talking to industry experts about how they shape the next generation workplace. I'm your host, Sabine M., and in today's episode, I'm speaking with Thomas Glatte. Thomas is Director Global Real Estate at BASF. Hi, everyone. It's quite early in the morning, and I'm speaking today with Thomas Glatte. He works for BASF, and I was really excited for this for two reasons. One is my very first internship I did at BASF, very long time ago. I was still in school. And the second is that I did actually use some of his books during my studies of real estate management. So I'm hoping he has some really interesting insights today. Hi, Thomas.
Hi. Good morning, everybody.
Can we start with you explaining what your role is and how you came there? So what your professional background is?
First and foremost, yes, thank you for having me. And it's also very flattering being approached very early Monday morning in the morning that someone has actually read my books. And so we will see whether I'm rather checking you than you're checking me. But talking a bit about me, I'm Thomas Glatte, 51 years old, by education civil engineer, coming from a family with 200 plus years in the construction industry. And yes, when I was a child already, I grew up almost in a concrete lab. Yeah, my father was an absolute concrete expert, and I had never any choice than studying civil engineering or being in the construction industry. And given my age, and everyone can calculate back, at least in Germany, when you start studying in early 90s, there was no such education like real estate. At that time, real estate was really something you just came across through other professions, very much like business administration background or civil engineer and so on. And it was also clear when I studied and I finished mid-90s with my university's time that I had to start as a construction manager. Everyone else who may remember that time in the mid-90s, Germany stumbled into a major recession of the construction industry. And this brought me, right after my university time, I migrated almost to Southeast Asia at that time. And I found a chemical company. I was just remembering by name, by the brand of the videotapes, BASF, who was looking for a young and ambitious engineer who is willing to travel excessively for their, what we call now real estate department. At that time, it was like Behördenverkehr und Liegenschaften in German. And how to translate it into English, it's maybe government liaison and land administration. And it was at that time more a land administration department. And they had a small but very fine team of doing industrial site selections. And so I was put into the hands of the team lead at that of those days and supported him for 2.5 years on major industrial site selections in China. And so I spent most of my time in Asia again. And apparently this also qualified me for the job, and later on doing myself a lot of Asian projects. So for the following years, like the late 90s and early 2000s, until 2005, I was either by almost full-time business trip or really then also moved my household back to Asia, to Hong Kong, lived for almost 7 years in Asia and was doing a lot of real estate projects over there. And then in 2005, the call came after a major restructuring of the organization. Thomas, can you not come back and take over what is left of the real estate department? And at that time, it was just like a bit of what we nowadays call portfolio management and a bit of transaction consulting. And out of that, over the years, it developed into a global real estate department covering almost all sides of the BSF organization and having the full coverage of like portfolio management, asset management, as well as also the facilities operation. So almost full life cycle, as well as the value chain, you can name it. And that's what it is today.
Now, BASF is one of the, if not the largest chemical company in the world. How big is the real estate portfolio? And I assume there's actually an interesting mix of space types, because you will have offices, but most likely you will have labs and production sites as well.
Yeah, and that's the exciting part of the job. Yeah, and yes, it's correct. At least as of today, BASF is still the largest chemical company, at least by turnover or by the value at the stock market. We are awaiting the merger of Sinochem and Inchem China, and this most probably will bring then a new market leader into the world. But irrespective of that one, given what you said about the real estate portfolio, just to give you a flavor, the portfolio itself consists, at least on the book value side, around 6 billion euro. We have 1,100 sites, as we call them. So these are locations, but where we have either people or property. And this is in 95 countries. Just as a flavor of also when I say site, this is something typical corporate real estate term. What does that mean? And it really means anything from a little sales office rented for our sales reps in Irkutsk to a warehouse in Bangladesh to the largest integrated chemical site you find globally in the world, which we see in Ludwigshafen, Germany, covering a total of 10 square kilometers, densely populated with production plants and labs and also offices. And but we also, and that's a bit like what you were mentioning, the entire portfolio consists of virtually every sort of real estate type or asset class, as we call them, that you can imagine. So I have offices, I have warehouses, I have production buildings, I have maintenance workshops, I have social buildings, even like canteens or even a hotel. We have residential buildings, we have agricultural test fields, we have, or we used to have, and still like a financial holding of ours, an oil and gas subsidiary in their portfolio. We also had oil platforms and gas pipelines, underground storages, and even in our current portfolio, we still have like a former coal mine, which is closed now, but still need to be taken care of, and dump sites, waste dump sites, and so on. So virtually everything you can imagine. And that's what I feel makes my job most exciting, because it brings variety. Every asset class has its own challenge, its own requirements, and it's always something new you have to learn.
I think especially with the more technical facilities, it comes in handy that you're actually a civil engineer and do understand, at least to some degree, what needs to be done to support the business. I do remember that Ludwigshafen, it's like a city on its own. I'm not sure if it was a train or a bus that was running within the location even. I was very impressed at the time. Well, I still am. Now, you said you took over what was left of the real estate organization. How's the CRE team set up today? How has it changed?
Yeah, well, this is something maybe to the leftover of those days. And to give you flavor, or at least it can always happen, yeah? In the organization of every support department is, and that's the world of corporate real estate, organization follows strategy. And strategy is defined in a corporate real estate world. It's the strategy is defined by the business, by the core business. And support departments have to follow that one. So in 2005, the organization, and we had a major restructuring, was defined as a lot of the activities were in these times Ludwigshafen centric. And that, at that time, we refined the entire structure. And my team in 2005 then consisted only of very local and centrally driven and an oversight of portfolio. The board at least decided, although there was a strong need of localization, they decided they at least wanted to keep the oversight of like that the company knows what they have. And that's still the core of our entire organization today. The corporate center, so the board and the executive management would like to know where are we, what do we own, what do we lease, what are our obligations, what are our risks evolved from that one. And out of this one, if we flip it into today's world, we then more and more looked also into actively steering the assets by buying, selling, leasing, letting, rolling out workplace projects, and over the time also taking care for the facility management, so really the operational tasks. And that's what we are having. And so in peak times, we were in the entire real estate organization around 1,000 people looking after real estate in the organization. But again, we have undergone in the past 2-3 years, again, a number of changes. And there you see how the pendulum swings once in a while. If you ask me today, the people taking care for the real estate in a setup, what we call global business services, it's 250 people. And when you ask me what has happened to the remaining 750, partially these were operational tasks that have been either outsourced to service providers or they have been what we call embedded back to the business units. So in a lot of the locations where a central management was considered not to be so beneficial for the agility of the business, they have been reintegrated into the business units. And that's a bit of like, yeah, these organizations, they swing back and forth. So we had for many years a strong strive for centralization, which also made sense. And we cleaned up a lot and we outsourced a lot. We cleaned up also a lot the portfolio, which used to be even significantly larger. Yeah, when I said 1,100 sites, you could imagine without these consolidation efforts, we keep a track record on that one. Without consolidation, we would have today a bit more than 2,000 locations on our neck. So it's consolidation, which means closing, selling, or ending lease terms, has very much to do also reducing complexity in a rather big, very complex organization, but also reducing risk. And with all that, yeah, we are now also part, and this has also changed, part of a global business services organization that is, again, just newly refining its structures and still finding its own setup. But these 250 people need now globally look into how do we support, I would call it, the larger scale of the portfolio, not the little sales offices of individual business units, but really like the country headquarters, the major production locations, and anything where we see a big value lever for the real estate holdings that the company has.
It's really fascinating how you, with the real estate organizations, you move along the CRE maturity curve that's often cited as to making things central, that's always better, and then going back and reflecting, well, is it really? Maybe for agility, and that's a big topic currently, sometimes it makes sense to have them back at the business. It's really interesting. Yeah.
And agility is a big, big topic, and we need to be aware, and this is also what our board clearly recognizes and pushes for decentralization. Centralization comes with a lot of benefits derived from synergies. Yeah? But we also have to confess it also brings quite a significant amount of bureaucracy. Central, so approval forms and are just like the tip of the iceberg. Yeah? And it's giving guidance and giving structure, and there's a lot of controlling and reporting. And yep, times have changed. And the decision is now really, we have to be close into the markets, close to the customers, and swiftly react to what the business's needs are. And coming from that perspective, the decision was most likely also, okay, we may have to give up some of the synergy savings in order to regain agility. And as long you earn more through agility, then you lose on the cost side. So it's a discussion of top line and bottom line. Yeah? And if the top line benefit is higher than the loss on the cost on the bottom line, then it's still good. Yeah? And that's what we now have to see. Yeah? And yeah. Still has to be proven. Yeah. But we are strongly convinced it will be like this, because our life today in any aspect became so volatile and so diverse that we have to act more flexibly. And yes, like a big ship, almost tanker like BASF with 84 special or strategic business units, as we call them. So these are business units that have their own P&L. So this is a complex organization, yeah? And trying to really have a stringent centralized management over it is almost destined to fail anyway. So and here it's really how much control do you still retain and how much liberty you give each country and each business in their own activities. That's something you always have to balance. Now we seek a different approach, and at least we just last Thursday we brought up our annual meeting and the results from the first quarter of this year, but also the outlook that already started towards the end of last year show that we are going in very much into the right direction.
I mean, you said it earlier, the corporate real estate, it's a support function. It needs to follow the business direction. And if the business is going through change, then corporate real estate needs to go through change as well. Now, I'd be interested, when it comes to your offices, is there a most common workplace configuration that you have?
Yeah. Also, the office world is something that has changed over the years significantly. Yes, and we have guidelines, but also these guidelines are currently, and not too much surprise, are revisited entirely again. I have to say, when I joined the companies in the mid-late 90s, this was a very traditional old style setup. It converted over the years a bit, but not much. Yeah. And a traditional manufacturing industry are considered not to be the forerunners in modern workplace styles, which is a bit sad, but that's how it was. But starting about like 2010, so about 10 years ago, this was the time when we piloted some locations that we deemed more appropriate in converting into modern open workplaces. We started around the world in New Jersey, in Hong Kong, in Sao Paulo. Yeah? These were like our regional headquarters, where we also had strong regional presidents who believed in also applying a certain change to the organization. This worked out very well. And this we used as a catalyst to change the entire organization. So now for the past 5 to 8 years, we really started to implement, whenever we had a new location set up, implement new modern workplace styles, open styles. But also, I have to confess, sharing ratios, we were pretty weak on that one. So we had no real sharing concept. So still demands that like every person, except like sales reps, had their own desk. This was still a pretty traditional approach, but that's how it was. Now, and now with COVID brought a total change. And already it's about a year ago now, we were sitting together as a real estate department and looked into the opportunities that COVID brought and basically everything which we had already ready as a concept. And so, everything that is applied and discussed now, it's not new. And it's just now rediscussed again. And be it remote working, be it sharing concepts, being more agile and more teamwork setups in offices. And so it was just like opening the drawer, getting out the old concepts, putting the desk aside that was lying on it, and really refreshing it, adapting a little bit to the current situation. And we are already right in the process of really also again redefining our workplaces conceptually and as they should be designed, but also by the site footprint, because there's no surprise, after this exercise, we need significantly less office space than we used to have. Whereby, again, also on our side, we rather look at the situation, what do we own, what do we lease, how long do lease terms last, where are the biggest organizational needs now, and on that basis, But we have already started. We are in the process, for example, we moved our Moscow office, are under moving it right now. So this is already exercised. This was something that just came across. So they reduced by a big amount. I think it's like 40% reduction of the entire space and work now in a totally different concept. And this will follow now also various other locations. There's not I wouldn't call it a haste on doing that, but we have a clear vision of what we want to achieve and we are destined to implement it also.
So the future of the workplace is going away from assigned desks then to more flexible situation.
People have been working from home and I think everyone, if you ask the organization, we had a few surveys. So feedback was for quite a lot of people. Yep. Everyone is also longing to get back to the office and to meet again colleagues. Yeah. And I see it also in my own situation. I go once a week, even in the toughest COVID times, I go once a week to the office. Just to do, because I have a lot of still, be it contracts, be it invoices, be it also paperwork for authorities, which is not still digitized. Yeah? So I do this and it's like celebrated. My assistant is coming, one or the other colleague is also coming, and this is the highlight of the week. Yeah? And we have an open floor plan office for which normally could host 50 people, so safety distance. We are then 3, 4, 5 people, so it's easy manageable. So people are looking back to go back to meet their colleagues, meet their peers, and so on. But there was also a clear message in these surveys that they would love to work at least 2 days a week remote. That means from home. We also, however, see, and I did also, and I always like to quote that I did an unofficial survey just amongst the real estate community. And this brought out, after 1 month being under COVID, that everyone is sending a picture from his home office situation. And the result was very simple, about 50%, and it was really half-half, about 50% of the colleagues had either equal working situation like at the office or sometimes even better. Yeah, like you see here in the screen behind me, I have a large study at home myself. Door is locked. My wife has her own world. So this is all fine. But the other half had lousy to horrible setups. And even the kitchen table was even one of the better working conditions out of those. So you have a number of colleagues who have not these abilities. And if you talk even globally, if for example, talk to my colleagues in Hong Kong, where families of four or five people share an apartment of 35 to 45 square meters, you can't do home office. Yeah? And similar situation is like in Moscow. So you also have to think about alternatives. And here, and this comes then back to the third option. And I always call this like we have in our vision, and we developed in the company a concept called Future of Work, which is just giving a rather wide frame and more of like a philosophy, a spirit. And the spirit really consists of three mindsets. This is we have to provide a real estate environment. It has to be complemented with sufficient HR tools, so means of like remote working guidelines, contract, so labor contract, so not cutting by the hour your day and so on, as well as also you have to have the suitable IT. Yeah? And these three pillars, they also need to be complemented by three setups. And these three setups are the traditional work environment, which has to be refined differently. Yeah? So more collaborative, more teamwork, and less desk-related tasks and in office layouts. You have the home office setup, which you technically can have, as well as also what we are currently discussing and piloting is decentral co-working. That means really applying and searching for tools that our colleagues can have a decent work environment close to their homes, not to the office, and then really make sure that they can avoid commuting, but which, by the way, also brings a net nice benefit as a windfall profit for the CO2 footprint that we are having as a company.
That would be third-party providers then for the co-working that's decentral, or would
yes,
you want
yes, yes, no. We don't think it makes sense to have something totally on our own. It's we will look for third-party providers. However, I have to say we are testing this ourselves. We have established here in the metropolitan region Rhein-Neckar, which is like greater Ludwigshafen, Mannheim, Heidelberg region. And we have established a little startup company ourselves, we have a startup company called Thousand Satellites that is operating under the umbrella of BSF concurrently and has already set up these tools, these features. So we have here four remote or decentral satellite offices right now and in working. And last summer when before COVID, as well as last summer when COVID was pretty calm, we saw it's the concept is embraced by BSF employees, but we also see it from other companies. And yep, the intention is really then to perhaps take a strategic, still keep a strategic share in the company, but in the long run, it should be like a third party. But you also need to keep in mind here in Ludwigshafen, we have 20,000 office workers solely. So that means people that are sitting on a desk. So for 20,000 people, it also makes sense to have something like this, at least under your control, with certain preferential treatments. But in other locations, it's solely third party related.
I mean, I know the area because I grew up there, and I think it totally makes sense. I can imagine that it really flies well to have these satellite offices because a lot of people are commuting to Ludwigshafen, Mannheim, Karlsruhe from the more suburban regions. They're traveling or driving for an hour one way each day. So that will really relieve them. And because I know the traffic situations always with the bridges over the Rhine, sometimes unnerving as well.
And fairly clear, this is also a concept. Since I'm a bit the mentor of the entire project, I also educated them and said, hey guys, that's the intention. And we have basically every metropolitan region has the same. If you go to Munich, if you go to Stuttgart, and I don't know who else is listening to that one. You have the same, be it in Moscow, be it in New York. So everyone who in the morning maybe once commuted from the Jersey side to New York City, Manhattan, knows what we are talking about. Yeah, all larger urban areas have these commuting problems. And I think this is a big market. And these shared facilities, and I personally enjoy it. I enjoy working from home. It's Monday morning, so I started today at 7 o'clock, like every other workday. But it meant for me today, like I only had to get up at 6 o'clock and not like normal at 5 o'clock, because if I would be starting at 7 o'clock in my office, it meant I have to leave my home at 6:15 to take the 33 kilometers ride, my office at least. Here, it gives me 1 hour more sleep, which is, I have to say, very much appreciated. Yeah, and so the Monday is pretty fine. And also, I have to say, I think for like many of people, like Mondays and Fridays are perfect home office days. And when you can start your week and when you can brush off your week, and then you have your, I normally go Tuesday or Wednesday currently to the office. And I could envisage that this is like in future, it will be like Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday. I could also imagine to sit in a co-working location, still enjoy a significantly better coffee than I have at home. And I also have a working environment and also see some other people. Yeah, I appreciate seeing my wife here at home. It's all fine. But it's also great to meet other people. Yeah, and co-working is very much, it's the name already indicates, it's about working collaboratively together and not just being stuck and the whole day in a study and in front of a TV and in front of a screen and just engaging in video calls. Innovation, and that's what we need to keep in mind. Innovation will not unfold in home office studies. And it will not take place here in the home. It will start with really also physical interaction and really live meetings. And that's everyone who is praising home office. Yeah, for administrative tasks, fine. Anything that relates to projects, that relates to innovation, we all suffer. And it was a bit, last year was a payback time, was a big payback time for all the collaborations that we've done in the team buildings and that we've done in the past few years. And we were able to recapture all these activities. But now I also realize myself, and this also the feedback that I'm getting from my team, we need, in order to further progress and to further advance in a lot of things, we need to sit down together again. And for that one, we need to have the right and work environment. And this is being either in a more agile office environment in our BSF facilities or in a decentral co-working environment.
Yeah, I mean, that there's been studies out there that people who started now new jobs really struggled because they did not have that past social capital that they could build up on. So what she said made total sense. Now, what I noted as well was that she said Monday, Friday are good days to be in the home office. And I think that a lot of people will tend to think like that, which means so that you run the risk of your facilities being empty on Monday and Friday, and you have peak utilization on a Tuesday and Wednesday. So you don't have that level out occupation anymore, which is not ideal. Let's say that. And I wonder, because you said you realized those savings for the Moscow office already, how did you go about planning future space demand?
For that one, we are right in the middle of a discussion on how to manage. And if you provide an agile work environment, that means also your work, the work environment itself has to be agile. Yeah. It's not like, and everyone who thinks agile work environment is like you have a sofa and you have a fancy chairs and you have like your Starbucks in the office. This is not agility. Agility is, it relates to constant change. that means. And that's what I also try to educate my colleagues these days, and who think, and I have currently also in as part of our restructuring, we also when we apply these new concepts, is that I need to have an flexible, like a system that is supporting this agility. I need to have something what I would call a digital building twin. I need to have the building data available because I need to reconfigure it, my layout constantly according to the needs. And I have to have a team that's currently also constantly planning the reconfiguration. And to say it drastically, it's a little bit like the co-working concept where you have the flexible use and use it according to your needs. But in the co-working, then you come to people from different departments. If you have your own standard set up, you need to reconfigure. Yeah. And we have to keep in mind the traditional line organizations that we are having right now. And part of the static setup that we are having these days is coming also in the office setup. If you have a line manager and the line manager wants to have his people sitting around him. Yeah? This is the traditional mindset. In future, we still will have line organizations, but they are less dominant. The line organization is for signing up the application for annual leave. Yeah? But typically, I think we are will flip to, and I see this also, these requests already from various departments, they think more in project organizations. The prevailing setup of the future in the work environment will be the project organization and not the line organization. And project organizations, as we all know, they grow and they shrink, depending on what the maturity or the stage gate of the phase of the various projects are. And that's why you need to have, configure it. You start in with the project team in a room of like 4 or 5 people when it's starting. Yeah? And over the period of a number of months, the team grows up to 100 people with using breakout rooms whatsoever, and then and shrinking again. So you need, and all these rooms will have, one day the room will be just like a quick small team room with desks. 2 months later, it will be design thinking workshop room. And 1 month later, maybe it's just a meeting room. I don't know. And maybe 3 months later, it's just storage. Yeah? Who knows? Yeah? In this all, you need to be able to flexibly plan. Yeah? And everyone in the corporate real estate industry can tell me one thing and will immediately sign up. The biggest lies that we are every day confronted is headcount planning. Yeah, there is no HR is coming along and business units along coming always along and saying this is the headcount planning for the next year. I have seen over my entire life not any of these numbers ever being correct, because very simple, you have on one thing from top down, you have certain expectations on like how to steer headcount. On the other hand, still there is work that has to be done. And either then you use to support this, and if you cannot hire people, you do this with secondments, you do this with consultants, you do this with whatsoever, but these are still people, yeah? And whether they are part of your corporate headcount or anything else, if work has to be done, there will be people to do it. And they never fit with what is a classic headcount planning. Yeah? And this you also need to reflect. And that's why this agility and this, and we are just at the beginning of that one. And COVID was just a big catalyst, which helped us maybe to make a mental evolution, which normally would have lasted 4 to 5 years. And we got this in a year, but it gave us a good flavor of what the future will be. And for that one, we need tools. And this is for me the key message. And I'm also in my company currently fighting hard to have such a technical support in order to enable us. And this then goes all into the discussion of data availability, data connectivity, all the making data available and then use them everyone is talking about a data lake. No one really could give me a clear definition yet what that actually means. And it's a wonderful buzzword. They say, okay, so where is it? Where can I pump the water out? And then we also need to discuss of like, if in order to use data, you need also to standardize this information that you can make it usable, yeah? And that you have not, again, pillar systems. Currently in my organization, we have SAP REFX, we have an own internal building condition, a tool which has a bit of a sustainability touch. We have a portfolio management system. We run various computer-aided facility management systems. And then we have various other sub-tools here or there and Excel spreadsheets of I don't know how many types. And everything works in a pillar. It's double monitored, double tracked, and in the end, not interconnected. And that's what we have to overcome as well.
A big circle. No, but that's what moves a lot of organizations at the moment. Yeah. That they feel like, we need the data, but then doesn't just make sense. It's not, if you just pile it up, it's just data. It doesn't tell you anything. Then you need to make sense and bring it into a shape that makes sense. And there's something I wanted to tap into as well, because you said headcount projection, that's the biggest lie that that's around. And I think that's true, because it always comes in a different way than you expected for anybody. A lot of the success metrics in place for corporate real estate, though, rely on headcount as well, because oftentimes you have like, how many desks per headcount do you have? How many square meters per headcount do you have? How many real estate costs per headcount do you have? Do you think these metrics need to change as well? Or are you looking at different metrics?
Yeah, well, we have that. But I always just have it as a monitoring indicator and not as the key performance indicator. Yeah, there's a difference between monitoring. Yeah, and for me, it's a bit of like still space efficiency monitoring, which you have to do. But I'm trying to refuse the argumentation that I steer according to that one. Yeah? And seriously, what are the key elements of for the success of corporate real estate department? Number one, it's and you have various drivers. Number one, you have more on the strategic level. You have the effectiveness. Normally, you have an indicators on a strategic level that are driven not by efficiency, but by effectiveness. And effectiveness is more the question, where I am, so in which location I am, and how big will I be there? So what is the overall size? Or this is more like the general concept. And here it's, for example, also the general decision that we give up and strive to give up individual work desks, let's call it, or work places, and go into more collaborative environment, and also in overall different concept. And on the efficiency, when it goes to the operational level, and the other point out of the effectiveness is the cost. Yeah? And that's basically that, and that's the work in the bottom line, yeah, and in somehow having being a contributor to the reduction of the bottom line, also of the cost line. And on the operational level, the biggest key criteria is satisfaction. You have to provide a decent satisfaction rate. You have to provide an environment where the other alternative is productivity. Workplace productivity and satisfaction. Productivity, honestly, is very difficult to measure. That's also something then the professor in me is also still scratching his head and I'm searching already for years also with peers on the academic side in finding ways to measure correctly in an acceptable way on like how do you measure and in increase or decrease of work and productivity defined from the workplace environment. And that's a challenge because the impact is also so manifold, coming from leadership styles. It's coming from time availability, project pressure. So to really have a comparability, it's a challenge. But satisfaction is easy to manage. and also easy to measure. And in here, for example, within BASF, we have after or during each workplace project that we applied, change of work environment, maybe moved one office to another one. We always had a pre-move survey and a post-move survey. And with the exception of one, at least here in Europe, Middle East, Africa, with the exception of one project, we always had significant increases of satisfaction by applying new workplace environments, modern, state of the art. And really even significant. No? It's not like just an increase of like 2-3%, but it was always like 10-15-20-30% at least, where the happiness and satisfaction of the employees increased. And this is a very good sign.
Now, you've mentioned that you are a teacher and a facilitator and also an author in the corporate real estate world. So I have two questions that I'd be really interested to hear your bits on. And one is, do you have a lesson learned that you can share, or like a golden nugget for anyone in the corporate real estate industry?
I think there are even a few ones. First and foremost is also, since I'm very much also, well, I'm in now in the industry for 23 years. Actually, on Saturday, so May 1st, it's now 23 years with BASF, and that for 23 years in the corporate real estate industry. Number one is no guts, no glory. That means you have to be brave in order to achieve things. You will, in a corporate environment, always meet resistance. Yeah? And you're always also, there are thousands of reasons why not to do things. And yes, mentally, in corporate real estate, the business is always on the stronger side. And if you have a sales manager and country MD, if he is not convinced, he can kill your initiatives unless you're brave enough to stand up for your visions. That means sometimes, sorry to say, you have to break resistance. And I see a lot of my peers also in other departments, okay, they are only the successful corporate real estate leaders were also able to convince. Yeah? Breaking resistance in the end means you have to convince. But you have to fight for your case. Yeah? And this is sometimes lengthy, sometimes cumbersome, and so on. So no guts, no glory. Yeah? The other is you have to wait for the right time. It's the other point. So time is with you. I also see I'm now in this department for 23 years. So we had a lot of ideas. And workplace concept is a very good example. And I mentioned this earlier. Yeah? The workplace concepts we are applying now are not new. Yeah? And yes, we've been fighting for them already for some years. But there will be time when you apply them. And COVID was the time. And this then, again, is the third one already. Be ready when the time comes. That means some of the cases you need to prepare, you need to evaluate, and they may sleep in the drawer for even a couple of years. But there will this time, and then you have to be ready. So you have to test your environment, and you have to make sure that you have everything in place when it comes. Then, because when the window is open, the time of this open window will normally be only very short, and then you have to walk through. Then you will be able to succeed. So these are basically the three lessons I would love to share, and also especially to my younger peers who started their career, who aim to really have a career in corporate real estate. I would say, and beside that, it's a wonderful world, corporate real estate management, especially also it's a good world because in the end, you are the client, the service providers, you can choose, you can drive, you're also on the decision side, and this is also a pretty comfortable situation, but you have to make something out of that comfort.
You need to deliver in the end.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I do think that some of these lessons are also very good lessons just for life in general. It's not that necessarily constricted to corporate real estate.
Absolutely. Now,
the other one that I'd be really interested for your take on is, if you could magically solve any real estate problem, what would it be?
Magically solve every real estate problem?
Any one. You can solve one.
any one. Ideally, what I would love to solve is more the, and this has nothing so much to do with corporate real estate. It has to do with the shortage of arable land. That's, for me, was one of the big topics of mankind. And keep in mind, I was working for many years in Asia, predominantly in China. It's a country with 1.4 billion people, and only one third of the country is having arable land. That means you can grow plants on it. On the other hand, these 1.4 billion people are living predominantly on that land, need construction land. So every house that you build is taking away land that you could use for agriculture. So that you could use for feeding these people. So the more people you have, you need houses. But on the other hand, it takes away a land to feed people. Yeah? And this is also one of the big challenges. And we have the land coverage globally. We have enough land, but most of our lands are either mountains, deserts. And so in order, Sahara region, Gobi desert, Himalaya mountains, and whatever you take, Siberia you can't use. I would love to have the right balance that we have enough land that we can build houses, decent houses, as well as have enough arable land to feed our people. This would be my vision. I know it's a very big wish. It's a big wish, but
it's a wonderful wish, coming back to sustainability and lasting our planet better. And I think that's a very nice end to our conversation. Thank you very much for joining. Thanks for listening. If you have enjoyed this episode of The Workplace Leader, there's more. Go visit our blog and have a look at some of the other topics we have covered. We have just released a study on corporate real estate in Europe that you can download. Or tune into our next episode of The Workplace Leader.